You absolutely cannot miss that picture.
When I was in China doing research for this book, Egon Mao, about now almost 2 or 3 years ago, Mao's image hung from the rearview mirror on a tassel of the drivers who drove me around. And Mao is now captured in art, sculptures, paintings. If anything, people say he's enjoying a revival. I brought home there are Andy Warhol prints of Mao around. So if anything, the iconic image has permeated the society even more, from the decoration on the china plate to the tassel on the rearview mirror. In Ludo Cheng's time, the same poster hung on the wall of his father's flat in the bus station. The same poster would be at on hang on every wall of every school, of every workplace, of every government office. So the image of Mao, as with the cult of Mao, was everywhere. It was a song you sang as a child at a nursery school. So folk songs were changed with the name of Chairman, added with the name of Chairman Mao. So it did permeate society, just both as a cult of personal worship and as a symbolic image to hold control over the people. And so, not surprisingly, it was in the slogans that Ludo Cheng and his two hometown buddies put up with rice paper paste. But just before their act, they put rice paper paste on both sides of the arch, put up two slogans to depict their act. And one of those slogans was "The cult of personal worship will now end." And the other was "5,000 years of autocracy will end now."
You couldn't even put it in Canadian context, but I guess, would it be like somebody spraying graffiti on Abraham Lincoln's memorial?
Well, I think we can't conceive of it because first we don't have that iron grip of an iconic image. In my childhood, I can think of the picture of the Queen that hung over the classroom, and that's gone. So first, we don't have that iconic image. Secondly, we don't have to resort to such almost what seems a reckless gesture, because look what price these three gentlemen paid: life imprisonment, 20 years, 16 years were their respective sentences. And then thirdly, we look at that and think, but these three men did this, and what did they achieve? So maybe we think, oh, from the West, we can't imagine the futility of such a gesture. When in fact, what the difference is in such a society, in an authoritarian society, where you don't have any means of protest or expressing opposition because it's not tolerated, then all you are left with is nobility of having acted. These three men did this as an act of defiance. Our Western eyes look at it as just vandalism because we have other means, effectively, of protest recourse.
I have to say, these are they're three pretty ordinary guys.
I think this is the power of the ordinary because, in other words, the student movement in Tiananmen Square was carried on the backs of intellectuals, students who are going to elite universities in cities like Beijing, Shanghai, Canton, where avant-garde journals are published. So these are three ordinary people from a political backwater, from the heart of Mao country, no less, where you think that here's where good communists are raised. One is a teacher, one is the arts editor for the local daily newspaper, and then, of course, Ludo Cheng is the bus mechanic. So you're right. They seem the most unlikely people to even travel to the capital, which is 1,500 kilometers away, and most people don't expect to see the capital in their lifetimes. But what drives them to Beijing is both the hope and optimism that China was on the brink of change, and that the leaders maybe were going to make that nod towards political reform and greater freedom. But also, you have vested in someone like the bus mechanic Ludo Cheng, carrying not only the indignities that he'd been living through in his own daily life, but from stories from his grandmother, from watching his mother in the market. In other words, the day-to-day indignities of living under that society, that just drove him to the frustration point. And to those are the bullying that goes on when local authorities carry out the dictates of the regime, whether it's, for example, the one-child policy, where Luda Chung, the busybodies, hound him because they don't want him to live with the teenage love of his life. They're underage. They search for them when they eventually marry, and the authorities want to undo that marriage. Then they become pregnant. The authorities want to undo that pregnancy by a forced abortion. It's Luda Chung seeing how the classmate of an older boy is arrested because he's put a slogan, an anti-Mao slogan, on the side of a wall, and to Luda Chung's shock, the boy is sent away to 15 years in prison. So it's these day-to-day indignities that he sees that you don't read about in the West when you read about human rights abuses and violations and long prison sentences. But it's this sense that if he doesn't stand up for decency and goodness and even something so basic as the right to love, have a mate, have his child, then all those basic values of what holds society together, all those basic values will just lose their currency.
The book is Egg on Mao. I love the play on words hidden in there, several different ones. The story of an ordinary man who defaced an icon and unmasked dictatorship. I've been speaking with the author, Denise Chong, and Egg on Mao is published by Random House of Canada.